Hi, thank you for listening to the Spotlight Report, our weekly podcast in which we sit down and speak with current academics about their life and research in lab. If you like the Spotlight Report, you can subscribe on iTunes, like our Facebook page, or find it on any common podcast app. You can also directly find the podcast on our website, which is loft.optics.arizona.edu/podcast. Please comment any questions or ideas for people you would like us to interview in the future. Additionally, if you have more feedback, feel free to email us at thespotlightreport@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. We're going to be speaking with Chase Salisbury. He is a graduate student at the University of Arizona. He studies optics, and his background in optics covers a wide array of topics. Specifically, we're going to talk about his experience in grad school and some of the realities and things that you don't often hear about. So it's a really interesting talk, and we hope you enjoy it. All right, so hi, Chase. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. This feels very cordial and very formal.
Yeah, we try. So that's why we asked you to wear a suit to it.
So I didn't comply.
So I guess to start off with, we can ask you, what is your background in optics? How did you get here?
Okay, so I started as an undergraduate at the College of Optical Sciences, which sort of happened as a whim, where I came in as mechanical engineering and then transferred to electrical engineering. So clearly I had no concept of what I wanted to do. And then I sort of landed on optics after I'm not sure what you call it, where you go to several different majors in one night and you hear a nice talk about why you should be in each major. It's like a, yeah, it's like an event to help people apparently like me decide on what they want
to
do.
You have to go to it too.
Yeah, it's required.
At the U of A.
Yeah, at the U of A at least, it's, you know, it's part of your grade to show up and get signatures from these people who are giving the talks.
I got chased out of one. I got the signature and walked out, and the lady tried to chase me down
me
a stage.
It wasn't optics, apparently.
Well, anyway, let's move on.
So anyway, so I did my undergraduate here, and then when I graduated, I got into the PhD program, but I decided to go work at Lincoln Lab in Boston, or outside of Boston, Massachusetts. So I worked there for just over a year, but while I was there, I was taking distance classes, so I was still in the program, so I was taking one class at a time. And then after a while, I decided that, you know, it's really hard to work and be a student and do both of them well. So I decided to focus on the school first, moved back, and landed in a research group sort of in compressive sensing and imaging, and then relatively recently transferred into a different research group in the field of interferometry and optical metrology.
Wow.
So sort of a broad range of topics there.
Yeah, it's really broad.
Yeah. As I'm saying it out loud, I'm realizing that the theme of not knowing what I'm doing seems to continue throughout my entire career.
So I did something similar in the sense that in undergrad, I started in biomedical engineering, and I really liked it. And then I heard that optics engineers make a lot of money. That's my motivation.
And you live in capitalist, you know.
I like buying the newest, hottest things, so... it wasn't maybe the best motivation, but at some point, I'm afraid to say, like, the first year of grad school, I realized I liked optics. So it took me a while.
That's right.
But I'm curious as to when you realized that optics was the right fit. If you've realized
that. If I reached that point. That's a good question. So it's sort of, it's difficult, especially in the undergraduate program, when there's so many broad classes you have to take, right? Like, in general physics classes, general electives, and that sort of thing. So I feel like for our program, you don't really get into the optics until, you know, maybe end of sophomore year or beginning of junior year. And so it's sort of difficult to sort of pinpoint when it was like, okay, I can see myself doing this. But especially because at a certain point, you'd either have to start over and when you change majors. And so at a certain point, you feel obligated to finish. But I think that there was a natural interest when I decided to go into optics from this talk. So when I got there, they had like a thermal camera, you know, and so it was one of those things where it's like I never even knew optics was a major, and then they had this thermal imaging camera, and it was very interesting, and so I sort of knew that I was interested right when I joined, but whether or not I was, you know, interested in going to grad school and sort of pursuing it long term, that didn't come until maybe senior year, where I had a little bit more experience mm-hmm. under my belt.
It's so nice that all of you have a lot of choice. Yeah, it's totally different in my case. So it's like we decide our major after you graduate from the senior high school, and you have to decide which to go. And then you just choose.
Wow.
Yeah, in the night. And you
one night.
Go,
you
one
get 24
night.
Hours.
Yeah, you got 24 hours. Or maybe several days before you know.
Wow.
Yeah, and before you know you are great. And you just choose a university, and you choose a major.
Wow. So what happens if you change your mind in that case?
Basically, you just hold on to it and graduate.
Wow.
Yeah, but I find it's quite weird because also, even though you choose different major, like, for example, optics and people in optics and were mechanical engineering, for the first 2 years, they basically take the same general courses.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's like the sophomore, the end of the sophomore year, we get the major courses. But still, we have different focus on the general courses. So if you want to change your major, it's still really hard.
I see.
So basically, they just hold on to it and graduate. And maybe change their mind when they have to choose graduate school or not.
Yeah. Well, I have two thoughts on that point. And because it's really difficult when you're graduating high school to decide what you want to do.
Yeah,
if
that's
you don't,
true.
If you don't even know what's out there, right?
What it means is.
Yeah, like, just like
speaking
push
from experience.
Her, yeah, just like push her to the way and you have to make a choice.
Yeah.
So basically, in China, there are maybe three bunch of people, I don't know. One kind is they just to choose go abroad when they graduate from high school.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a wise choice, actually. And another part is they don't know what to do. They just say, okay, this name seems really fancy. Or, okay, I guess I'll have a lot of money if I choose this major.
The old Logan Graham.
Yeah. And the third part is like, I quite like this. Some of them just know what they want to do. Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Or some of them just like, I like this kind of area.
Sure.
Maybe I'm not so familiar with it, but at least I think one of them.
Sure.
Yeah. So basically, it's three kind of person.
Yeah. Well, I think it's hard to make a decision. And then, you know, to feel like you can't change, I think that's stressful.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like that in China, when we grow up, we definitely think, okay, I make some wrong decision.
Mm-hmm.
But all we have to do is forget about it.
Keep working.
Keep working. Okay, I know I made a mistake. Well, forget about it.
Oh, so no. It's like grad school, but very early on.
Yeah. I don't know. You can say grad school start very early, or you can say the undergrad school start very late.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it seems like all your first 20 years, you just choose this way, and suddenly one day, you think, maybe I shouldn't do that.
That thought settles well.
Yeah, like sometimes you go forward and backwards a little bit, and forward and backwards a little bit.
That is interesting, because, what you described is kind of like the sunk cost fallacy, which I see happening in the U.S. a lot, where you say, like, well, I'm in my third year, it'd be, like, what a fool I'd be to switch if I spent so much time.
Yeah.
I mean, you're saying,
yeah.
It doesn't matter. You don't have the luxury of a fallacy.
You're just stuck. It's actually more comforting because you know there's
no
other option.
Choice, right?
I don't know what to say. Sometimes it's good because you have no choice, then you do not have to worry about that. But
and I think there's something to be said for that, honestly, too, because there are a lot of students, at least I've seen a lot of students here, where mm-hmm. they kind of meander for a number of years trying to find the major that fits them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost feel like you can build it up too much, and I guess we'll get into this later, but like, I don't know, I enjoy optics. Optics is just a pain in the ass. A lot.
Yeah.
And it's hard, and like, the STEM fields, from my exposure to them, are hard. Mm-hmm. But that's part of it. And I feel like there's kind of something disingenuous about trying to find the right major, and you assume, like, oh, I'm going to get into it, and it's going to be fun, and it's going to be easy, and I'll like it. Like, I don't know I feel like that's almost too much luxury sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel good. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I was going to say that along the same lines, though, I feel like to offer a counterpoint, I heard a really good quote from a professor here, Bob Norwood, who was saying that, like, there aren't very many interesting problems left to solve that only require a single field. So even if you end up in something that you're not really happy with, you know, let's say optics or mechanical engineering or what any field, right, you're likely to cross paths with someone who has a different skill set, and you're likely to maybe pick up on these things or get an opportunity to work in sort of a parallel field as well and tackle a problem from a different angle. So, I mean, even though it feels like sometimes you get stuck with, well, I don't want to do this, I don't like this anymore, if you actually go out and work, it's oftentimes where you find yourself working, you know, in a completely different field than what you actually studied in. So there are opportunities to sort of branch out. It's hard to think about that when you're, you know, up at 2 a.m. studying for a final that you don't want to be studying for or something.
But at least at that time when you're making the choice, you're really happy. So
that's right, yeah.
So it seems like you guys are trying to do something, both have fun, happy with it, and hold on to it. And it seems like a part of us are trained to be good at it. So maybe you're not so happy with it, but you're good at it. So
then natural aptitude sort of thing. Yeah, I agree.
Oh man, well, that's off to a cheery start.
that's why I offered a contrasting point of view. I didn't want it to immediately feel like we were like, well, we're all trapped in anyway. So good luck with that graduation, listeners.
So why don't we talk about getting into grad school and kind of the experience of choosing grad school? Because I know you and I at the same time were trying to decide if we wanted to come here, what we wanted to do. We weren't aware that we were totally selling our line of happiness away when we agreed to go to grad school. So what was going through your mind at the time?
Yeah, that's, you know, when graduation comes, you always think that you have a plan. And then, you know, sometimes you go on job interviews and sometimes you hear back from grad schools and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to pick one or the other, right? Like, whether you're going to one school or another, or you're going to go work, or you're going to go to grad school. And so pretty much through my entire undergraduate, I had decided that I was going to try and get into a PhD program, and that was the path I was going to take. But it became really difficult, especially after 4 years, you know, senior year, when I felt a little bit burned out. You know, like, I didn't feel like I was getting as much from all the classes. I felt like I was running on very few hours of sleep to try and get done and graduate, that the prospect of going and working for a little bit actually started to sound more attractive. So I never really considered going to another graduate school other than here, just because it was sort of comfortable for me, and I knew the professors and I knew the research areas, and sort of I had known people who had graduated from the PhD program at Arizona, so I sort of respected the alumni, right? So there wasn't really sort of a choice on that program, but for me, I decided to go work for a little bit just because I couldn't see myself immediately enjoying grad school after having come off, you know, a lot of work for undergraduate. So I needed a break, so that's why I went out and worked for a little bit. But then it's funny, like, sort of like the grass is always greener scenario, where I worked for a year and realized, you know what, I think I'd actually rather be in class, and so it was a lot of work to move all the way to Boston and back, but I feel like when I came back, I had a sort of refreshed perspective on classes, and I appreciated it more, especially having gone from watching lectures on a computer to being able to sit in class and ask questions. So, yeah, I can't offer too much perspective about, like, how to choose the best grad school, but, like, I can certainly say that working for a little bit and taking just a year off or a break or, you know, distance classes really helped me sort of get back in the swing of grad school to sort of say, okay, I worked, I realized what's important, sort of what's not important, and I've decided that this is actually what I want to do. So I think that when I started back full time, it was sort of like, I've seen the other side, right? I've been out there, and this is where I want to be. So that sort of helped my morale, because I know that if I transitioned straight from undergrad, it would have been a rough, rough time.
Yeah.
So how about you?
I transitioned straight from undergrad.
Yeah. Did you go through a rough time?
No, I would say that my rough time came this last summer and then during the fall, because that was when prelims was. And, I transitioned straight to here from undergrad, and I worked for, like, you do all this schoolwork for the first year, then the second year, and then the fact that in the third, or in the summer before the third year, we have to take this big test that I found somewhat meaningless. And, like, I don't know, I feel like there's a limit to how much stress a human can handle. And, like, maybe, like, taking a break or, like, to go work is, like, oh, cool, I get paid, it's fun, I get weekends. So for me, transitioning straight to it, it was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Like, I can't. This is such a mistake to still be here. But anyways, we got past it, obviously. I think, though, that you brought up a good point in that the alumni and the professors are a big indicator. Because I had a choice between a couple of grad schools. And all things considered, first of all, I made sure that the professors and people that I respect and the research was solid. And then once that was equal, I looked at the culture and the community. So that's why I came here. But I would recommend taking a break to anyone that is listening, is thinking about coming to grad school and as an undergrad. Don't go straight into it. Did you do that?
Yeah, I did that. Yeah. And I really regret to do that, actually. You know what? Actually, these days, I'm just thinking about taking a break or something. Mm-hmm. But I feel like maybe it's not the right time. I don't know. Comparing to graduate from undergraduate school. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's the right time. Actually, I find it's really weird for us. It's like, if we don't know whether we go to work or or accept a PhD program, we just choose master's program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's becoming more common here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it tracks like along with the economy, apparently, that it's hard to find jobs. You just go to grad school.
That's right. Yeah, you just delay having to look for a job.
Delay the real life.
Yeah. So for me, at that time, I think, like, I don't really want to work because I got a 1-year internship in China, and I find myself is not so interested in that kind of part.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so sure whether the PhD program would be really suitable for me, considering it had to take a long time.
Right.
So I just choose a master's program.
Yeah.
And then I feel, at that time, I feel it's not so bad, 2 years and several courses, and you can do your research.
Right.
But then you realize, actually, after all that 4 years, and you are not so sure what to do, this is not a wise choice, at least for me.
Right.
Because even though you keep on working, we keep on studying, you still do not figure out the issue you want to solve at that time.
Sure.
Like what you should do. You just go through a next step and learn something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think part of it too is that coursework is inherently pointless.
I don't know.
It sounds like a jaded view.
No, I mean, coursework, like, the point of doing courses is to better yourself. But at some point, that just becomes, like, you could almost say selfish. Like, if I'm bettering myself to better myself to better myself.
Yeah.
At some point, it should kind of be so I can apply myself to something, you know? And I guess in grad school, it's supposed to be research, but a big challenge comes with the fact you have to do coursework at the same time as research.
Right. You're talking about graduate coursework or just coursework in general?
I'm talking about graduate coursework. I guess undergraduate is purely theoretically coursework. And then if you want to go to grad school, the point theoretically should be that you're, at least here in the U.S., the point theoretically should be you're doing research and you're trying to prove something new.
Right.
Yeah.
Realistically, you have to do a lot of coursework while doing research. And I guess that's a good question is, I had a point where I was like, you know what? I know the stuff I need to know for my research.
Right.
And I've got to the point where no one knows going on because it's research as the point of it.
Yeah.
So why in God's name am I wasting my time with more classes?
Right.
That I'm not going to use for research.
Yeah.
That I probably won't use in work.
Right.
It's like the middle schooler's dilemma of, like, why do I have to learn algebra? I've never used math.
Right, cursive in third grade.
Yeah,
people are like,
yeah,
you're going to use this.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
still haven't used Maxwell's equations.
You need to have Charles de Lucas.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay, here's my opinion on coursework and graduate school. My thinking about coursework is that you have to have some level of knowing that some fundamentals, right? That someone out there decides that these are the requirements for fundamentals in terms of, like, if you are going to be an expert in optics or biology or whatever the field that you're studying, then these are the things that you should probably know about, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in general, the idea is, in my opinion, that grad school should be about, like, okay, I'm now qualified to sort of, like, go out, tackle a new subject, learn, you know, the basics, and, you know, then ask questions and work to try and develop this field. So I would agree with you in that a certain number of units, you know, past the sort of fundamentals or the basics of the subject you're studying is maybe not as useful as like the few basic foundation courses. But if there's something in grad school they don't understand, you should be able to go out, you know, check out a book from the library or something like that and be able to figure it out on your own, because the idea is, I believe, that grad school is like training you how to think and how to solve problems, as opposed to teaching you how to learn, or I guess teaching you just a subject in general, right? So more independent learning should happen in grad school. So in my opinion, I think that maybe that they require too much coursework, you know, and that if you are interested in a topic that's like relevant to your research, like maybe pursue that. But I do agree with that. There's a certain level or a certain amount of coursework that should be required, because when you graduate, you need to be like, you know, legit, for lack of a better word, in the subject, right? Like, if you don't know some basics or something like this, and someone asks you about it, and they're like, where did you get your PhD from? How is that possible that you graduate without knowing anything about focal length? what do you don't know to do about Maxwell's equation? Yeah, so anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's valid. That I think the way that I perceive it is fundamentally there should be a core material that you understand about optics if you're going to get your graduate degree, because, like you said, if someone asks you something, you should be able to answer it. And then on top of that, you should have the evidence of having done some robust research. And that, I mean, I think that should be evidence enough that you should get your graduate degree. But, like you're saying, I think that there's too much demand for too many classes.
Mm-hmm.
But, anyways, that's...
Maybe just...
It might just be the opinion of people who are sick of taking classes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's okay. It's totally fine. Because I have some classmates there in Europe, European countries study or stay in China. So it's totally different situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like in European, if you go into grad school, they both basically ask you to focus on research.
Mm-hmm.
So you have less coursework requirement. And in China, it seems like to push all the basic material you have to know, give you a package within 1 year. Yeah. And you go through it. And next year, you do not have to take any course at all. Just focus on research.
What? So what's the requirement on this package? Like, they give you a stack of, like
stack
a list of books.
Yeah.
You go through it yourself?
And courses. Yeah, and you have to take the exam. And you have to finish it within 1 year.
Oh, okay.
It's a tough year, but
I was going to say, this sounds like prelims or that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, basically.
On your own.
Yeah. Prelim on your own. But it may contain more courses than the prelim course.
Oh,
You have a tough year, but after you go through it, it's a paradise again. Yeah.
That sounds really nice. Like our John, you and my advisor, Daewook, we interviewed him the other week. And he always espouses this idea, like, you're at the university, take as many courses as you can. He has, like, when else are you going to be around an expert in whatever random field?
Yeah.
And I totally buy into that. I've audited Spanish courses. I want to audit, like, a cryptography course. Stuff that's not related to my research.
But makes you happy.
Yeah, and it's interesting, and I don't have time.
Right,
yeah,
because of research or because of courses required by optics?
I mean, so for me, research takes priority, mm-hmm. and then classes take priority. But
then free time.
Sleeping somewhere down near Fada.
Sleeping somewhere just below food.
but yeah, because of these courses that I have to take, which, I mean, I really legitimately haven't used them. I don't think I'll use a number of them. Why shouldn't I be able to take courses I find interesting?
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. Actually, I talked these questions with a professor here because I made a huge mistake for my second semester. I just choose some course that I'm really not so good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just find it's interesting. And I feel like, okay, I'm an optics student, then I should know that, then I take that and screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
And the professor just talked to me, okay, you're not an undergrad student right now. You are a grad student. And he talked to me in this way. And he said, you look at your peers. People who do this area, they have a really background on it.
Uh-huh.
And they're good at it. If you're just taking that course, you are not in the same level competition.
Mm.
So just forget about it.
Yeah.
Except some
wow.
course you have to choose. You just choose what you are good at it. And choose some course related to your research. Just forget about all your interest. Your interest. Yeah. He actually say me in this way and say, your interesting part should be like what you should do in your casual time. Not like, okay, I'm really interested in this kind of field.
Right. And you were like, what's casual time?
Yeah. This shouldn't be your casual time. Your casual time should be like photography, painting, or whatever.
I just,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that's really disingenuous because, like, you make a joke, but I don't have casual time.
Sure.
I have a little bit. I'm not going to be, like, totally extreme, but I don't have much.
Right.
And you're selecting students who go to grad school who inherently like to learn.
Yeah.
And you're telling them, like, you like to learn what we want you to learn. I just feel like that's really
sure.
stupid.
Yeah.
But
I don't know. It's kind of telling the truth. Because after I follow his advice, I feel like my life become much more better. Like, I learned something, I'm good at it. Because you cannot know everything, you definitely get something new, and
yeah,
you learn
yeah.
something, and you feel like,
But
huh.
this class that you were in, were there, like, prereqs for it, and you jumped above them? I'm confused mm-hmm. as to, like, whether or not this is, like, a course that everyone could take without any prereqs, yet dominated by people who... If they're special,
So basically, it's like, because it's quite different in China, like, when we go to specific major,
yeah.
for me, I go to the optical engineering part, and we never learn about the, what is 501?
Maxwell's equation.
Yeah, we never learn
electricity
about...
Electricity and magnetism.
Okay, we just know the four formulas,
right.
and that's it. And we only know something about photonics, or something about quantum mechanics, those are specific... just the nouns we ever heard.
Right.
And we never see it.
The buzzwords.
Yeah, we just know this kind of word exists, and we know that it's the basic of it, and that's it. We just forget about it and go through other stuff.
There's a lot of forgetting about it.
Yeah, there is a lot of forget about it in my life. And I, yeah, and because
yeah.
you're so young, you're innocent, you don't know everything about it. You think, oh, forget about it, it's okay. And then you certainly, to some age, I don't know, grow up or sometimes you feel like, should I really forget about it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Then you begin to think in this kind of issue.
I will say, as much as I joked that, well, it wasn't a joke, that the prelims were pretty awful, that was the point when I feel like I got some deep learning in these core subjects, because it took five, so we had to do it on electricity, magnetism, diffraction, geometrical
yeah.
optics, and quantum.
Right? Yeah.
And when you're taking them, it's like, this is dumb. Pass the exam and keep moving on. And then you get to the prelim, and you're like, whoa,
oh,
we learned this.
Yeah, right.
That was one nice thing, is that you really, like, I can still kind of, I know when you said Maxwell's equations, I wasn't like,
them.
Who?
Yeah, right. I agree. I mean, and that's what I was trying to get up before, where it's like, when you take the time to, like, when you're not in a course where it says, like, turn in this homework on this time, you know, do this assignment, etc., and you're forced to sort of read the book on your own and, you know, ask
yeah.
these questions, you have a much better understanding of it, which
yeah,
I'm sort of interested
yeah.
in this sort of, they hand you a package of coursework and you have to learn it on your own for a year, because I feel like that's, you're better off learning it because you ask the questions that are interesting to you as opposed to being like, this section, why are we learning about this section? I'm just going to phone this one in and, you know.
Yeah, I know that. So that is the reason why actually I made a, I don't know, maybe a mistake, maybe we're not on my second semester, because the teaching way here in China is totally different. It's like, you know, for example, like for diffraction, we actually in China, the professor, well, some professor will be really nice. They will give you a specific explanation of it, and you have a profound background of it. But some professor, like, maybe... I shouldn't say that. But my professor at that time, because we are not focused on that area, he just tell us, okay, this is a concept. Then all you need to know is how to solve this kind of issue.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, like you memorize it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when this issue comes out, you should use this formula. When another issue comes out, you just
right.
solve it. But you don't understand it. So,
I mean, I think that that's a reality too, of grad school, is that you get better at knowing how to do classes.
Yeah.
You're an expert in taking classes.
Yeah, and especially like exams, you know.
Right.
It's not like the most pleasant thing to hear, but there are times when you're like, oh man, I need to just memorize these types of questions because that'll be on the exam.
Yeah.
Which right. probably isn't a good thing, but.
Probably not.
Yeah. I guess it's different.
Here we are endorsing grad school.
Yeah. Maybe in some field if you are not into it, it's a good way. But definitely when you do something you like, you definitely want to know what is background.
Mm,
and
sure.
you will figure it out by yourself. You're yeah. just saying you're a liar. You won't do this on that courses.
Okay, so let's pull back a little bit, and I want to ask you what your hardest academic moment was in terms of classes, because I know what mine was. It was when I failed an ENM exam along with the entire class, and the professor then said one student didn't fail, and it was a 17-year-old who got 100%. And there's a moment when you get slapped in the face with like, man, I got a 30% on this exam. What am I doing in grad school? And there's another moment where a young chipper lad walks up and says, "Oh, take my 100, please."
Right.
He's
yeah.
genius. Forget about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's hard. Grad school is an environment where it's like you take a distribution of students in undergraduate, and, you know, some, let's say, top portion of that distribution go to grad school, right? But now that top percentage of students is now redistributed in grad school, right? So now you have the top of the top, and now the people who were at the top in undergraduate now feel like they're at the bottom. I think that's a hard spot to be in.
Mm-hmm.
But apart from that random comment I just said, I think the hardest academic moment I had was something that you alluded to earlier with prelims, where it's sort of like feels like a make or break moment, right? Where you're expected to take this exam on this date, and you're provided with all the materials that you need to know, and it's up to you to demonstrate some level of understanding on this test, right? And it's really stressful because it seems like, you know, if I don't pass this test, I'm going to be behind. I'm going to have to, like, figure out what I'm going to do. It's going to delay my graduation and that sort of thing. And you don't know for sure what's going to be on the test, and it doesn't seem possible to know every topic 100%. And so it's sort of this very stressful time where you're forced to figure out, like, what do I think is important, and I'm going to focus on those things and hope that of the Venn diagram of the things I study and the things that show up is larger than just this very small sliver. But it's really difficult to spend that amount of time studying for studying some range of topics, and then on the day of the test to be able to, you know, convey that you have some understanding. I just think that the magnitude of the test itself is probably the most challenging part.
Mm-hmm.
And its implications, right? Like, looking back on it, it's like, oh, yeah, that was a test. I handled a passing. It was fine. It's easy to sort of forget about how stressful it was in the weeks leading up to the test, being like, I don't know what's going to happen.
And you, I mean, at the time, I started feeling like I defined a lot of my self-worth as an optical engineer based on the results of this somewhat arbitrary test.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is like a really screwed up mental space to be in.
Yeah, right. It's like, if I don't pass this, I'm not qualified to be in the program, which is not true at all, right? I mean,
right,
there are several percentage of students who take it again and end up passing and that sort of thing. It's just, it's very easy to put a lot of pressure on yourself in scenarios like that, and whether it's a preliminary exam or you know, whether or not your paper gets accepted into a publication or something like that. It's very easy to sort of, like you said, tag it with your self-worth in terms of the results.
Yeah, I mean, when I complained, or not complained, but talked to my girlfriend a lot when I was studying, and a big thing that I kept reiterating, which, you know, I mean, in hindsight, I'm sure if you're taking a big exam, if you're taking, like, the LSAT, if you're taking the MCAT, whatever big exam, this probably happened similarly, but I got it in my mind. I was like, man, I have gone to school for years. I focused on school. Mm-hmm. I made it to grad school. I worked somewhat hard. But like I prepared as much as a human possibly could prepare for this exam. And
right.
If I don't pass it, what does that say
sure.
about me?
Right.
Like, therefore, I'm just must
What have I been doing the last 6 years?
Yeah, I mean, more than 6 years. What through high
sure.
school, I spent a lot of time, you know.
Sure.
And that's just not a good mental place to take. You
yeah.
know, like, don't do that if you're taking a big exam.
Yeah.
Because like you say, it's an exam. You
right.
don't know what's going to be on it. You don't know how you're going to feel that day or what
right.
other circumstances might happen. So
yeah, no, I completely agree. And the thing that I recommend most is, like, for people who are studying for those exams,
mm-hmm.
spend time with people who are not taking the exam. Because
yeah.
it puts it into perspective, like, oh, this exam isn't the only thing that I need to focus on, right? It gives you a chance to take things with a grain of salt, so to speak, right? So that's my advice for someone who's really stressed out about this exam or some part of grad school that is really, you know, giving them anxiety or something like that, is to spend time with people who are totally removed from that same topic. That way, it sort of puts things in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that is actually out of my expectation.
How do you?
I mean, when you're talking about what is the hardest time to your academic stuff, I thought it shouldn't be the exam. Even though it's prelim exam, I think it should be something else, but it turned out to be the exam, so I feel like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think my first comment, honestly, was kind of a joke. It definitely sucks having 17 to kick your ass, but
yeah.
But realistically, it probably was a prelim. I mean, the prelim, like, it really sucks, and you see other people take it, and
uh-huh.
they're, like, zombies. I mean, they're not happy.
Not everyone.
Not everyone, of course. And that compounds it. Okay, so that's a great point. You see other people take it.
Sure.
In prior years,
you're going
like,
with this.
Right. And you're like, man, people look like zombies. They're tired. They take it. You see some people get out. You see some people get out in the next week, and you see some people super happy getting beers, and you see some people
wow.
just devastated.
Sure.
And it's like, oh my God, that sucks.
You
and
see a lot.
You
yeah.
see a lot, and then you get to it, and you're like, hey, like, I've seen other people do this. I'm going to study. I'm going to get through it. Obviously, I'm smarter than everyone else. I'm not going to fall in any same traps. And then 2 months into it, you're like, I'm a zombie. I'm depressed.
Right.
I'm totally tired. I'm totally too stressed about this. And then you look to your side, and, you know, some random other student might be taking it, and they're like, oh, this is no problem.
Right.
And
You're still studying for prelims?
Yeah, or like, I just started, and I know everything.
Right.
And that's something that you spoke about earlier, that you select from the highest caliber students, theoretically, in undergrad to put them in grad school. And that's a really tough spot to be in, to be like, man, I certainly worked hard and I was smart. And apparently now I'm like the village idiot. So,
right. Yeah.
I don't know if you have any feelings about that. Or were you the student? You were looking at me like,
why are you studying so hard? No, it was difficult. Yeah, I think it's hard anytime. Grad school is one of those environments where you're always comparing yourself to other people, right?
Yeah, I hate it.
Yeah, it's like, oh wow, should I be publishing a paper? Let me look around and see. And you've got people who are like, hey, don't worry, I'm also not publishing. And you're like, okay, good. And you look around and people are like, I'm on my third publication, and I'm going to get accepted into Nature this week. And you're like, well, I guess I'll just quit grad school now because someone else is doing it much better than me.
The people who are saying, hey, don't worry, I'm also not publishing, are usually your peers, like your friends.
Yeah, that's important.
That's a really important thing to have in grad school.
Yeah.
We were talking about it the other day where, like, you'll be in lab for months, you won't get results, you'll be like, tight, this is the dumbest research project ever, I'm an idiot for doing this, I'm not ready for my finals.
Sure.
You walk out of lab, you see someone else, and you're like, hey, how's it going? They're like, great, man. You know, like you said, I just published in Nature and aced my finals, and
yeah.
gonna go do fun stuff. And you're like, yeah,
it's
me too.
Great. Right.
Yeah, that's great too.
We're both doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in the environment itself is so, like I just said, it's very competitive, and you're forced to compare yourself constantly to how other people are doing, what progress they're making. And Logan's making a really good point where the only people that you tend to really divulge the true aspects of your research, whether it's not going well, are the people that you're really close friends
yeah,
with,
yeah,
right? In general, if someone that you're sort of acquaintances with or just a classmate and they ask you how your research is going, it's very easy to be like, things are going well, making good progress, because
yeah.
you don't want to come off as not making
yeah.
making progress or not being successful, because you're, like I said, you're always in this sort of like, keep things close to the vest, because I want to come off as I'm being successful, because I don't want to be like you said, the
yeah,
village
yeah.
idiot who's running around
not
publishing or not having successful research. You want to feel like you're contributing to this field as opposed to sort
and
of coasting.
I think it's hard to, because I mean, competition exists everywhere. I think it's, you two might know a lot better than I do, but I think that in the private sector, or just when you have a job, it's, there will be clear defined goals, and then additionally at the end of the day you get to take home a paycheck, and that's rewarding in itself. Whereas in grad school, you define success in a large part based on, is my research successful, and did I publish it, where did I publish it?
Right.
The challenge with that...
And is someone using my... Are they citing my work, or
right,
did
right,
it just
right.
disappear into a bookshelf
yeah.
somewhere?
The challenge with that is that there is zero guarantee that your research will be publishable. You might test the hypothesis and be like, it's totally wrong.
Right.
Totally
yeah,
wrong, and I spent
true.
Months doing it,
sure.
and I can't publish it. You did work.
Yeah.
You did
yeah.
just as much work as the other person. It's just by luck of the draw you didn't.
Yeah, I completely agree that a lot of it is, you know, we're all in this process of trying to figure something
yeah.
out that's novel and interesting and worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you chase down a problem and it's not, and that's just part of the
mm-hmm.
the process. And a lot of times that either leads to things that are useful or things that you figure out that, you know, fuel something else later on down the line. And so I think it's important to think about the process as a whole, where it's like, you know, like as cliche as it sounds, like probably the best inventor, you know, it took however many failures to get
yeah,
there, but
yeah.
but and it's very easy to say. But when you're, you know, in the lab for how many hours a day, and you've just found out that your hypothesis is wrong or something, or it just doesn't work like you expect, or the whole setup is flawed to begin with, it's very hard to come away with positive takeaways. But I think that's the part too, where you have to remember that it's part of the process.
Yeah.
And there's something in there that's valuable. You just haven't found it yet.
Yeah, you just have to convince yourself again and again. Yeah.
You just have to look yourself in the mirror.
Yeah, and say, I'm
and
great.
Say, what you're doing is useful.
Oh, man.
I don't know, because I'm working on the underground. It's so horrible whenever. And there is a room only me and my machine.
That's the title of your memoir.
Yeah, yeah. No,
me and machine.
Yeah, machine. Oh, of course, Bill is here. He's an optician here. Sometimes always come in the late afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I say, hey, how are you, Bill? And he just say, and I suddenly feels like, I maybe shouldn't be so chill. I should calm down.
No.
Bring it down to a level.
Yeah.
I think that one of the highlights of my day is saying hello to you, because you're always like totally thrilled and you're in optics and you're like, oh my god, I'm in here again. And then you say hello really excitedly and you're like, oh, okay, maybe things aren't too terrible.
Right, a brief window of
I ride
of
that
cheer.
Wave. I ride that wave for like an hour and then.
Well,
yeah.
It depends, because if you just stay you and your machine for a while, you feels like yourself became a machine.
So I think that this is so there are two things I definitely want to address. First of all, to people listening, we've made it so far sound like you're in the, you know, the ninth circle of hell in grad school. And I don't necessarily think that's the case.
Right.
It's tough. It's really tough. There aren't like clear metrics for success.
Definitely.
Right.
Or at least they don't like clearly tie into how much work you put in.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to compare yourself to other people, and that's dumb. Don't do that. But it also really is
hard
fun.
Not to.
Like, make friends with your peers, talk about the reality of your research, because that
mm-hmm.
makes it a lot more tolerable. I mean, hugely
yeah.
more tolerable.
Yeah.
What I do want to address is that I think that to the layperson, there's this huge misconception about what a grad student's, a day in the life of a grad student is like. I've had one research project where I literally, for a summer, I was testing retina stuff, and I literally had to shut myself in a blacked out room in the basement of a hospital to get my rods to activate and the cones to deactivate. And then I had to put my head into a microscope under a black garbage bag for hours. And when I wasn't in there, I had to wear an eye patch. And it was like...
For what?
Because it took so long.
Whimsical.
You have to do something to keep it exciting. you don't want your cones to start activating.
Sure.
On another project, like you said, I was down in the basement and I had to align this interferometer.
Yeah.
And me and Greg and Andrew would spend hours through the week, hours on the weekend. And at some point when you're like in this tower underground while people are out having fun watching a football game, you can hear them and it's shaking the tower nano radians, and you're just livid about them shaking the tower, the wind shaking the tower, and you're like, whoa, this is my day? It can be pretty rough.
Yeah,
you know?
It could be. But once you get used to that, it'll be okay.
Okay.
Once you get used to it.
Yeah, because you're sooner or later, I mean, once you know you're gonna stick to this for a long time, you have to think, okay, I have to find a way out. I cannot be like this every day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's interesting. So one thing I wanted to comment about is that you're right. Like, you have to get some enjoyment out of what you're doing because otherwise it's not sustainable, right? So I read somewhere once where it's like, if you're going to get a PhD in something, you have to, like, live this topic, right? Which sounds really corny, but it's like you're thinking about it most of the time. You're working on it during the day. Mm-hmm. If you can't sleep at night, it's probably because you're thinking about why your research is or isn't working.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like, there has to be something that you enjoy about it, right?
Yeah.
So when you spent you're aligning this mirror up in this tower, right, at the end, and you were able to measure it, and it was validated, and it's set up in a telescope somewhere.
That is super
That's amazing, right? It fills you with such a sense of pride that you were contributed to that, right? And so I think that's what keeps you going in grad school is the successes. And I think that it's hard because sometimes the successes don't come one after the other. And sometimes there's a period of time between them. And that's when it gets hard. It's because you find this lull where it's been so long since your last success. You don't know when your next success is coming. And that's when the challenge sets in. Because I also want to comment on the fact that humans tend to plateau really easily.
Yeah, that's
right? Like,
true.
If you have a success, if you ace an exam or something, or you finish a research project, you're like, this is the best feeling. I feel amazing right now.
Yeah.
And then the next week, you're like, all right, this is the status quo. Like, I already had that success.
Yeah.
This is my new normal,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so then it's like, okay, well, wait, when was the last time I had a success? Because now I'm on this plateau for so long. Because we tend to really celebrate these successes or accomplishments for a brief period of time. And then after, you know, 2 weeks have passed, it's very easy to forget about them. So I think that's where the difficulty of grad school comes in, and that's where you have to have perseverance to get to the next one, because you don't know when it's coming, and it feels like a long time since your last one. So you're always in this sort of, like, point where, you know, you're not too sure about things.
And I think both of you guys make really good points in the sense that once you have one or two of those successes, this research paid off is really enticing.
Right.
And it draws you back, and B, understanding what research is and, like, the struggles of it and kind of embracing it and kind of saying, like, oh, man, like, I'm going to sound almost like Dave Wood, but where you're like, this is a hard problem, I can't wait to work on it more.
Sure.
I really feel like I've gotten to that point.
Right.
And that's when it brings you back in.
Yes. Yeah. So it's not all bad is what we're saying.
It's not
about,
bad.
About
it's
grad
that
school.
You, like, I mean, I brought that up in the first point because I think I've heard lay people who will say, like, grad students just go in whenever,
that's
and they take
true.
Vacations, and they drink beers and publish. What a life.
Yeah.
That's
it's not,
true.
We do drink beers. A lot of it does. I need this beer.
Yeah, it's just because we need it. Just
right.
Like we need coffee.
Right. But I think, I mean, it really is hard. But I think for the grad students or incoming grad students, that's part of the appeal. I mean,
right.
That's at some point it's going to click, hopefully, that's why you're doing it, is that you love solving these hard problems.
Yes.
And you're in there so much because you love solving it. You want to solve it. And that, I mean, that's the draw of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And you know how happy you're going to be when you solve it.
Yeah.
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 Exactly.
Yeah. And you just drink those beers until you get
drink coffee in the morning, beer at night. Yeah, exactly. So, but I think there's a huge anxiety, you know, in grad students, that where when you're stuck in between these two successes and you've sort of lost sight of of what's good.
Yeah.
I think anxiety is a hard problem, you know,
yeah.
And I think
yeah.
it's more widespread than people might like to admit.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I want to make a comment because we were joking about drinking beers. Again, so if you haven't gotten it at this point, grad school is in fact hard. And I think it's super valuable to find a healthy way to take out your stress, to go
yeah.
have fun, go hang out with friends, go
yeah.
join groups or clubs, whatever.
Yeah.
I have seen so many fellow students legitimately have like alcoholic behavior. Or start kind of using substances in negative ways, and not even necessarily like totally wildly illegal substances, but like drinking way too much coffee,
right.
or literally using caffeine powder,
wow.
Or like, I mean, I've had friends who would kill a bottle of wine a night on their own, stuff like that, and that's amazing.
That's the point where you don't want to be at.
Yeah, that's something to be really aware of.
Yeah,
I mean. Like, I think that our listeners should be aware that that is a reality, and, like, don't do that. Don't let it get to that point. Go do yoga to, like...
Yoga
you know,
time.
Yeah, let me do
hiking time.
Because you really have to put it in perspective. It's grad school. You like the problems. It can be tough. If it doesn't work out, that's fine. It's
yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, and still enjoy your life. Don't get so into it and then be like, I need coffee, 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 and then when I get home, I can't sleep, so I need to get totally, totally trashed to sleep and, like...
Sure.
I think that's a cycle that like legitimately exists in grad school.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But I think it can be isolating because
mm-hmm.
like you said, if you spend 10 hours a day in the lab with the garbage bag over your head, yeah. which by the way, that's like a choking hazard, right? So if you're listening and thinking about recreating the lab results, consider the dangers. Yeah. But spending all that time in a lab can be isolating. And when you're working on a research project and maybe the people that you spend a lot of time with aren't working on these research projects, it can be, you feel like you can't talk to them about
yeah.
how it's going because you're not talking to people who kind of understand the struggle of working on a difficult research problem. And that's like the isolation leads to anxiety and the anxiety leads to probably bad behavior. So I think like, in my opinion, there should be more of an emphasis on like mental health issues in grad school because
yeah.
I would say that a lot of students probably have anxiety, and maybe some of them even have worse symptoms than that. And
mm-hmm.
so if you're listening and you do feel isolated or something like that, like make sure you talk to someone about it and not continue on this path of isolation because it's a huge problem, and I don't think it's addressed as much as it should be in grad school.
Great.
So I'm myself really interested in how you guys solve this issue when you're really anxious.
Solve this issue?
Yeah. Or
it's the current issue.
Yeah, when you are really anxious or in a really anxiety situation.
Like, what do I do when I'm anxious?
Yeah.
Like, how do you, if people are listening and they're like,
yeah.
they're describing all of my symptoms, what do
yeah.
I do? What
yeah,
do I do?
Yeah,
what
do
I
do?
Yeah.
I run. I mean, that's like my hobby, I run.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
that's the key, is like, in those scenarios, you feel like you can't take a break from anything, right? Because it's so important that you just have to keep going and you have to spend 10
yeah.
hours a day on it. But that's exactly the time when you need to get away and take a step back and go on a run or hiking or whatever,
yeah.
whatever you guys were mentioning
yeah.
earlier. Find something that you can do that's unrelated to detach yourself from that. Or, you know.
And music.
Music.
You like music. I mean, both of us
yep.
are music.
Playing music.
Yoga
yeah.
is great.
Yeah. Anything that you can do where you can sort of try, as hard as it is, to unplug from that problem a little bit just to give yourself a break. Because it's so hard to take a step back when you feel like I have a deadline, I have this, I have that I need to get done, and I can't figure this out, I have to spend more time on it.
Yeah.
By taking a break, you're giving yourself a chance to relax and come at it with a fresh approach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that does, I mean, a lot for, like, just reducing anxiety about it. And, I mean, if it's even worse than that, if going on a run doesn't clear your head, you know what I mean, like, the campus health usually
yeah,
has people
yeah,
to talk
yeah.
to and, like, has medical professionals that if you need to talk to someone about it to manage anxiety, I think that's a totally acceptable
yeah.
and probably underutilized tool
yeah,
for
yeah.
grad students.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah,
because no, sometimes you can't run far enough.
Yeah.
yeah.
I just run, and I keep ending up back here somehow.
Right. even Forrest Gump.
Yeah, and I think that... also, what really helps me is that when I go home, it's like my personal time. Like I don't check emails from work, much probably to the chagrin of. I do my best to not think about work. If I start thinking about work, I actively try to stop thinking about it. I try to be present with my girlfriend. Before I had a girlfriend, I wasn't great at this, but like I'd go climbing with my cousin, and I was there. I was climbing because like bringing it home with you, man. You know, you go to sleep and you have these nightmares of your brutal. So.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, because actually several days ago, I just read a paper that say, seems like female get a tendency to have a mediation stuff. Am I right?
I'm not sure I follow. What's that?
A mediation.
Oh, like that females tend to seek mediation? Or I don't understand.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like female tend to seek mediation and it works really good for them.
Mediation in what sense? I don't
like,
necessarily understand.
I have to check the word, actually. Sorry, I have to check the word. I'm not so sure whether I say the correct English word or not.
Or, I mean, are you saying like, oh, in moderation?
No.
No, definitely not.
To me, it sounds like going to see a counselor or something like that.
Yeah.
Mediation.
Yeah,
but, meditation.
Oh, meditation.
Meditation. Yeah. Oh, so bad. Yeah. Let me repeat it again. It's really hard to cut. So several days ago, I read a paper that say female tend to get a meditation, and male tend to get sports.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So by them, so after I read that paper, when I have a chance, I just ask them.
Yeah. I will say that there was a semester where I was really stressed, but I forced myself to sign up for a bunch of like intramural sports, and that was a very helpful way because I knew, you know, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. I was going to go play basketball or go play football or whatever it was that we were doing. You know what I mean? And then it was like, it almost distracts you, right? Like if you go for a run, you're sort of still able to think. But if you're playing a sport where you have to think about, you know, how to play without making yourself look like an idiot, that requires some level of focus.
I think yoga too is probably one of the best ones that I know of. You said that when you were studying for the prelim, right?
Yeah, that was super helpful.
Yeah. So it really helped you. It didn't help me.
Yeah, the whole time you were still thinking about prelims, and I was transported to a beautiful pasture.
Yeah. And I think, for me, there are certain things that like really put it in perspective. I think that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Go watch like a documentary about like, I don't know, kids in Africa or something. And that sounds kind of cliche, but legitimately, I watched a documentary, I think called Girl Rising, about these girls. You were there,
yeah,
Girl
yeah,
Rising.
I'm the...
And it's kind of like, Jesus Christ. Like, these kids are like just working so hard to get any opportunity. And here I am like, oh man, I have to be in lab. It's not that bad. If I want to leave lab, I'll leave lab. I'll get a beer. Or I'll get dinner with my girlfriend. Yeah, or whatever. I mean, yeah, perspective. And just... go witness some people really enjoying life, regardless of their situation, and it really helps to like remind you, like, oh yeah, life isn't totally brutal. So
yeah,
okay. So I think we gotta be pretty close to done. What's
11:40.
Okay, yes, yeah, so we got a few minutes. What I do want to close with, I think it's an important aspect, is advisors. I was terrified of my advisor, Jim Birch. No qualms. When I first started, and he was a big reason why I decided to come here. Jim used to head the Optomechanics Lab, the Loft Group, and this guy's a genius. I mean, I think that's fair to state. And he was brutally tough. In Optomech, he made us memorize all sorts of stuff, and everyone complained, and then it ended up being worthwhile. And I was, like, legitimately afraid to go talk to him and to share my results for, like, a couple months. And then, like, I started being like, oh, wait, he's still a human. He's not a robot, as I presumed. There's still no evidence. and he started kind of – and, like, he showed me this cool, like, thermal camera that he attached to his iPhone and kind of these, like, humanizing acts.
Sure.
And then the best thing was realistically seeing him get a beer in Hermanos or something and drinking a beer with him. And it was like, oh, you're doing research also because you like it.
Right.
And that's why I'm here. and you happen to be orders of magnitude more intelligent than I am. But, like, I mean, being able to humanize with your advisor is so essential. Because I know a lot of people can't, or who like, can't relate and just don't feel comfortable talking to them.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
Yeah.
As well. I would say another thing is, like, you have to be able to, the whole thing is, like, they're going to be your mentor, right? And so if you're talking to them and you have a really hard time learning from them or learning from their teaching style, then just from the get-go, it's going to be a difficult situation.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to being able to feel comfortable talking to them, which doesn't always come easy at first, as you were saying, right? Sometimes it takes time. But you have to be able to talk with them about, like, difficult subjects, meaning, you know, complex and, like, the science, not necessarily, like, you know, difficult topics to talk about. You have to be able to talk with them about these really hard questions and take away something from your conversation, right? If their teaching style doesn't match your learning style, then it's really hard to learn throughout this whole process. So sometimes it's hard to gauge, and so sometimes it's best, if you're interested in joining an advisor's group, is to take a course that they're teaching to see sort of what their teaching style is, to see, like, if they teach out of a book or if it comes from experience and that sort of thing. And
oh, talk to their students.
Yes, that's the most important thing, is to talk to their students, because they'll tell you what the work-life balance is like. They'll tell you what the expectation is for progress. They'll tell you if how easy it is to get your questions answered or how fast feedback comes. And so, and I think that's a pretty widespread. We're not breaking ground here with
No.
I think that's a pretty common recommendation, but I can't recommend it enough to talk to the students themselves. And like, don't be afraid to, like, ask them these questions that like, are you really only here 8 days and, or sorry, 8 hours a day, or is it like 10, or is it like eight
days
a week? Yeah, wow. You need to be more committed. But yeah, so asking them hard questions, and I don't think, you know, student to student, I feel like they shoot straight.
Make sure the advisor isn't present, maybe.
Right, exactly.
Just tell me, honestly.
Right.
I also think going into, I guess this is the last topic that I really want to cover, but going into grad school as an undergrad, I hate to quote Kendrick, but I would recommend, I can't recommend it highly enough, be humble. Because in undergrad here, or engineers at the university, or like math students or physics students are insufferable. Oh my God. Like, they are, communication students, they're down here, and, you know, health students are down here, but we are doing the real hard work.
Right. The real math academy here.
Yeah, you're going to get wrecked when you go to grad school. You're going to realize you are not that smart, that there are kids smarter than you, 17-year-olds or younger, that the professors are, like, another level.
Right.
Yeah, so just...
Plus, it makes interactions with other students a lot harder, right? That's the whole thing that we were talking about earlier, where it's like everyone is in competition, and so, you know, if everyone is just a little more kind about, you know, what they're doing, or they're not so insistent on, you know, parading their successes, it makes everyone's environment a lot more amiable.
And when you're realistic about it, when you say, like, man, actually I'm struggling with this, you might find that other people help you or have good ideas.
Yeah.
And by that I mean you will find that. Ask people when you're struggling.
Right.
Don't be stuck up about it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So I guess that's all.
Yep.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, thanks so much for...
thanks for having me. Happy to do it.
Yeah, great.
That's so great.
So thank you for listening this week to the Spotlight Report. And as always, you can listen to us on iTunes, on our website that is loft.optics.arizona.edu/spotlightreport.
Yeah, it's a long name.
Yeah, or just /podcast, either one. And you can also find us on Facebook. As always, we really encourage you to email us or comment with any questions, comments, or suggestions for future interviews. So, thanks again.
Thank you.
As always, thank you for listening to this week's episode. We look forward to any comments or feedback you may have. To leave a comment, please visit our website at loft.optics.arizona.edu/podcast or our Facebook, which is SPL Report. Additionally, you can email us at thespotlightreport@gmail.com. Lastly, we would like to mention that we are always looking for new topics or people to interview. So if you have a topic that you would like us to cover, please let us know. Thank you and have a good week.